This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Super Bowl is days away. Football fans will be watching to see if Tom Brady can bring home a Lombardi trophy one more time and wondering if retirement is on his mind. If Tom Brady does retire, obviously he is set for life. But what about the average player? My guest today is one of those players. Robert Turner played professionally for the United States Football League, the Canadian Football League, and briefly in the NFL. And he uncovered firsthand what happens behind the scenes in college and professional football. His new book is called Not For Long, The Life and Career of an NFL, The NFL Athlete, and he debunks the mythology around the glorified athlete. Robert Turner is a professor at George Washington University and a research scientist at Duke University and joins us now. Hello, Robert. Good to have you here.
It is great to be here. I'm glad to be back down here in the Triangle and give me opportunity to meet up with a whole bunch of good friends, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, and meet for the first time our next guest who's going to talk a little bit about some of our topics today, but let's talk about this. I mean, we know for anybody who pays attention to football, certainly they know the Tom Brady's and the Cam Newton's, and sometimes outside the sport, they hear about these outsized contracts and you know, the careers they have. And we would assume that even the lowest paid player in the NFL, somewhere around $500,000, right? If you're the last one picked, you can do pretty well. You have a couple of years of that, retire, you're going to be fine, right? But you're saying not so fast.
Well, that's exactly true. I mean, I was just in Miami at a book talk there, and one of the men asked me in the crowd, he said, how can people who play in professional sports, how can they go broke? How could they have no money? How could they have a difficult time? And well, one of the things that people fail to realize is that there are no cut contracts in the NFL. So people don't have guaranteed contracts. So unlike basketball and baseball, so it's really a make-do situation. You only get paid for the last game you played. And the average career is 3.3 seasons. So there are plenty of guys that are like Cam Newton when he signed and received a $20 million contract with $10 million signing bonus and that part of the signing bonus guarantee. But there are plenty of guys who wind up like myself. You go in, you play for a couple of games, and that's not even a full season, and then you're out of the game. And so when you look at taxes, you look at you know, you have to pay your agent, you look at family situations, and before you know it, that money could be gone in a flash.
So what should we worry about that? I mean, here's a sport, elite players play, and they have a chance to play or not. They don't have a full career. Okay, so you play a couple of games and you're out. You had your fun.
Well, you know, I when I was writing this book, one of the voices that was in the back of my head was a doctor that was doing a postdoc with myself at the University of Maryland, Dr. Chris Saintville. And he said, there's no way that you'll ever convince me that NFL athletes, with all the money and the resources that they have, that they are being exploited and that we should really care about what's going on with them. And I would say, you know, generally, in terms of them and their financial situations, yeah, they make a lot more money in a short period of time than the average person. But that also means that they're a lot more vulnerable to some negative outcomes. Just imagine if you were 21 or 22 years old and you won the lottery, somebody gave you $1 million, and you have no family history on how to manage money. I would imagine that everybody in that situation would find themselves to be pretty vulnerable. And that's not even talking about some of the other issues that led them there before they even got to the NFL, and some of the college issues and high school issues and communities that they come from.
Well, that's really what your book focuses on. So let's take this kind of deeper systemic look. Transitions from college to pro, and then most importantly, the transition out of professional football, particularly for those players who don't have 1,000 options and millions in the bank.
That's exactly right. And that's really what I try to focus on is what I say is that the NFL, when I first started this, I thought to myself, is the NFL the evil empire? Is college sports, NCAA, are they the evil empire? And really, I don't say that they are. But what I do say is that football is one of those games. And the way we're kind of getting to American, what I call the sports industrial complex, it will exploit the most vulnerable people who are weak and exposed to this system. So what do I mean by that? Is when you go to college, if you're a first-generation college athlete and they tell you, well, take these courses and they pick this major for you, whether you like that or not, whether you know anything about that or not, well, then you're beholden on that system, which is much different than you saying, I have a plan, I know exactly what I want to do, and I'm going to execute that plan while I'm in school.
Plus, you're a 17-year, we're talking about the NFL now, that whole feeder system. So you're a 17-year-old boy who may have been playing football for his entire life, and I say 17-year-old boy to mean invulnerable.
Absolutely.
You are going to win. You're the top, and no, you'll never end your career.
That's right.
Because that's how 17-year-old boys think. And this may be the only way out for you, and so that's the vulnerability you're talking about.
It is true. And, you know, and it's not just people who have their only way out. Football is their only way out. I think it's very important. I'm a sociologist, right? I'm not an economist. So people like to say, well, what about all the money they make, and people are going, they're going after this for money. But I also want people to recognize that there's a great amount of social prestige that comes along with being the high school athlete, the star on your team, being the star in college, and then transitioning into the pros. And once you have that, where people look at you and say, you matter, where other people don't, that is a really powerful aphrodisiac that will motivate people to do a lot of things that maybe sometimes isn't in their own best interest.
And blind you to what you may be missing out on. You talk about an example, UNC Chapel Hill in the summer of 2013. And I think, and because UNC was caught up in the controversy over channeling students into easy classes and not forcing them or asking the best of them, what became a controversy down here? Talk about what you found.
Well, I find this to be interesting because I have a real strong, you know, appreciation for UNC. I had a postdoc there. So my training came there, and I love the people that are there. But, you know, when I first landed on campus, I was working with Dr. Richard Southall in the College Sports Research Institute. And we were invited to go to a faculty senate meeting, and it was about athletics. Jan Boxall happened to be there at the time. And I had already interviewed several people for my book, and I talked about what I found on different college campuses. And I said, you know, UNC, this is going on here. You're having some of these same problems. And what I received over and over and over again, no, it can't be happening here. That's not the Carolina way. Well, then very shortly afterwards, we saw that that is the case. And many of the athletes were saying, yeah, I chose this at school because it's my best option to make it into the NFL. I get steered into classes. And, you know, this is what you have to do in order to make it here. And under that time, it was under Butch Davis. But, I mean, this is a pressure that all colleges go through when you're making millions and millions and millions of dollars to run your sports program.
Well, talk about Butch Davis. There's a quote in here that from one of the athletes you talk with about precisely that, about the demands or the lack of demands for any kind of academic excellence, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You're talking about that quote where obviously Butch, and he was interviewed about this later, but he said, hey, you didn't come to UNC to get an education. If you want to get educated, go to Harvard. You came here to play football. And he said later that that was a tongue-in-cheek, that people know it. But I've talked to athletes who were on that team. I talked to athletes in other places. They say, you know what, we hear that all the time, because the fact is these are these competing interests that we talked about. And when I was at the University of Michigan, I told the athletes up there, if they pay your head coach $5, $6, $7 million a year, do you think they pay him to make sure that you get a quality education, or do they pay him to make sure that they win? And that's what you get caught up in. And oftentimes, again, those are the guys who are then transitioning and going into the NFL.
And talk about the transition first, because you write about that as well, the difficult transition going from college to pro. Not a lot of time to prepare for that.
Well, that's true. There's a guy in my book, we call him BK, because I didn't want to give his first name. He asked me not to. But he was he left college early, had a very great college career, and he signed his first he was drafted in the second round, third round. He signed his first contract. He was 20 years old. He said he was too young to sign it at this time. His grandparents signed it for him. He said the football part was really easy, but the adjustment, he had moved from Colorado down to Miami, women, everything was just so much. And then after his first year, he had the offseason, he's ready to go back to camp. He said he went to the ATM machine to take out some money, and he realized that there was nothing in the ATM machine. And he said at that point, he said, how did I spend $1 million this last year? Well, at 20, 21 years old, I think that's reasonable to see that without an intervention, people are going to make those kinds of mistakes.
And a lot of people around you in college and even in high school making sure you stay on the straight and narrow, and suddenly you're on your own.
That's right? Exactly right. And that is the thing, is that within what I call football really a totalizing institution, particularly in the college area, they do everything to enable you to focus on sports. I even say, I make an argument, I was talking to my good friend Jeff Tedford at Fresno State, who's the head football coach there, that essentially what football does is most guys, it suspends their adolescence. It keeps them in a place where they say, hey, listen, we'll surround you with all the support you need, so all you have to do is focus on being the best football player that you can be. Well, what that does is it eliminates opportunities for people to make mistakes and grow, right? How to mismanage money in high school so that way, or college, I can know better to do it when I'm in the pros. Somebody else literally washes your uniform for you all the time and packs your bag and carries it for you. So you are not prepared when you get to the other level of doing those things. You got to learn on the fly.
You don't mean Cam Newton now in the pros washes his own
uniform. I don't mean that.
Okay. But talk about that. Talk about that transition. I don't know who does his wardrobe, but somebody's looking pretty sharp, making him look sharp.
That's for sure.
Talk about making the transition out, your transition out of the pros. And I'm talking about the average guy, maybe the player who didn't even get to play for 3 or 4 years.
Sure. So in the book, one of the things that I do is I make this argument that, you know, again, football is a stratified system. From the very beginning, we all who start loving this game, we love it as dedicated spectators. And then all of a sudden, we get on the field, we put our helmets on, we start running around, and the stars start rising to the top, and then the journeymen, and then those who aren't good enough, they, you know, get chafed off, and they return back to be dedicated sports fans. So, you know, by the time you're just kind of coming up and going through this whole thing, you start to recognize, and this is what happened to me at a certain point. After I had been in the CFL, I was in the USFL, played for the New Jersey Generals, which was owned by Donald Trump at the time. And then by the time I got into the NFL, I looked around and I thought, you know, they got 53 guys on a team. I'm always going to be somewhere between number 45 and 53. Every year I'm going to reset the button and it's always going to be the same time. And I thought, well, once I got cut the last time, I said, well, I better, you know, look at something else to do right now. So rationally, it made a lot of sense. But when I sat there across, you know, the desk from the general manager, he asked a question that really rocked my world upside down. He said, you know, we no longer need your services. Where do you want to go from here? And I realized he didn't just mean we're going to give you a plane ticket and stuff. He did mean that. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, what it meant was, wow, after 16 years of doing this, I don't have an answer of where I want to go. I know where I don't want to go. I don't want to go back home and face all my family and friends and tell them I got cut, right? What I really wanted to tell them is I want to go back in the locker room and put my uniform back on. But that started this whole 10-year odyssey of me trying to figure out, well, what do I do now? But the one thing that I did know is that after about a month, I said, well, if the greatest thing that I've done in my life my greatest accomplishment has been achieved by 28 years old, if I don't figure out what to do with the rest of my life, I'm going to be in trouble. And so really the book comes out of that and going back to graduate school and trying to figure all this stuff out.
Well, let's talk about your case, which is exceptional in some ways because not everybody does what you do. In fact, most players, I would say, didn't do. But talk a little bit about the decisions you made and how you came to them, and then we'll compare that to other players.
Well, once I figured out, okay, well, what am I going to do from now? This is in San Francisco, and I thought, all right, well, let me go down to Los Angeles, and I'm going to go visit my uncle. And he did really well, took care of me, and took me out to Venice Beach, and we're just sitting on a beach. And I thought, all right, I got to figure out what I'm going to do with my life now. And he ordered a margarita, which I had never had in my life, and except it tasted pretty good. And I'm looking over the ocean, and I'm thinking, I'm staying right here. So basically what I did I had my wilderness experience for about 10 years. I just kind of started businesses, tried to work here and there in corporate America. And I knew I wanted to go back to school. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I tried to do the LSATs for law. None of that really fit until I moved back to New York. And a friend said to me, you know, you want to go back to school. You ought to go back and study race because you're always talking about racial issues. And I said, really? You can do that? And she said, yeah, it's called sociology. So that's what I was working full time at that point. I was the managing director for a sports marketing company. And then one of the professors in school said, to make it through this class and to make it through this program, you should study something that you know. And I thought, well, I know sports and I'm around athletes. Why don't I figure that out? And then that came this question, why do so many guys, particularly like myself, have a difficult time in their transition to life after football? And part of that meant it forced me to think about, why did you play football in the first place? And that's what started this odyssey of 4 years doing 140 interviews, living with athletes, and trying to understand what does it mean to be a football player in America.
So now talk about the other transitions and what you found in that 10-year odyssey as you talk to people about the difficulties and some of the things they face.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt like one of the things that was really stark for me was to realize that, for instance, when my family background is such, we moved from inner city Newark, New Jersey to Piscataway, New Jersey, and at a time where, you know, they were desegregating schools and all this other stuff. And we moved at a very interesting transition time where the town was having an influx of African Americans from the inner city. And at that point, I found that I was not really being let in, but the one place that I was being seen as equal or superior was playing sports. And it just worked out for me that I was better than most people. So that's really what opened the gates for me. There wasn't a lot of expectations academically or anything. I was just kind of went under that same premise that so many athletes do, C's get degrees, right? And so that's really all I was doing, was just floating along. It wasn't until much later that I realized that I could actually do a lot better than C's. But I really feel that in terms of the transition out is very much affected by why you got into the game in the first place, what expectations you have for yourself. And the one thing about sports, in particular about football, that's so great is that you're always challenged to be a champion, to be the best, to never settle for anything less than perfection. So you work real hard at that goal. And that works. That's a transferable skill. But no one tells you that, you know, once you're out of the game, you can apply those skills in other parts of your life and do really well.
Well, I was going to say, you can probably take the opposite message at the age of 28 if you've made your greatest accomplishment and it was to get cut by the last team in the league, right? Well, then I guess I'm not so good.
Yeah, that's certainly. Well, fortunately, in my case, I was cut by the Super Bowl champions.
There you go.
The 49ers. But yes, yeah. I mean, and that's part of the difficulty is you miss the camaraderie and all of that other stuff. But then you also start to say to yourself, and from a sociological perspective, you know, we don't have language. We don't have a transition. We don't have anything for ex somebody, being an ex football player, an ex 49er, an ex, you know, right, Duke player, right? We love the people who are doing it right now. But when you're ex, particularly in the sports, people ask, well, what happened? Well, how do you tell somebody right what happened? You don't even know what happened.
Whose responsibility is this? Should young athletes be told, look, be careful, get an education, make sure you've got that, because most people don't make it and it's on them? Or do college athletics and professional athletics have some responsibility to make these transitions smoother?
Well, I think yes on both accounts. I mean, you said it earlier, and I think this is very true. When you talk to young people, they think they're invincible, that whatever has happened to everybody else is not going to happen to me. Again, in the book, one of the things that I talk about, right, we talk about the sports industrial complex. The other thing that we mentioned today is the professionalization of youth sports. We're telling kids right now, you know, I was just looking in the newspaper about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, Jim Harbaugh offered a scholarship to a kid who's in the eighth grade. How is that kid in the eighth grade going to think that he's going to do anything less than be the next Tom Brady? He's already been anointed, right? So his whole existence around him is everybody is preparing him to be there. I really think it's very difficult to tell young people that you need to prepare on this level for something that won't happen for you on this level. That message doesn't resonate with a lot of people. So I what I try to do when I'm teaching classes, and I have a lot of athletes, is I tell them, I want you to be like Renaissance Man. I want you to think about developing your talents on multiple levels so that way you can be excellent and provide contributions to society all over the place.
I've only given you 30 seconds for this, but what does that complex, what does the NFL, what responsibility do they have?
The NFL, I think the NFL is, they're doing what they do, right? They're in the business to make business. I would say the NFL Players Association has the real responsibility to take care of the former players and the existing players in a way that sets them up for life.
Robert Turner is a professor at George Washington University and a research associate at Duke. His book is called Not For Long, The Life and Career of the NFL Athlete. Going to be at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh tomorrow night in conversation with Ron Rice of the NFL Alumni Association. And you can find a link to his book at our website, stateofthings.org. Robert, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate it.
We're still talking football. The daughter of an NFL coach remembers her father's experience, her life on the road, and also the tragic experience with CTE. We'll talk about all of it on The State of Things in just a moment. Stay tuned.